Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Public Broadcasting covers all games from the state basketball tournament this week. Class AA boys and girls games are on SDPB1 TV, boys Class A games on SDPB2 TV, boys Class B games on SDPB3 TV. All games are also streamed online, sdpb.org/basketball. We've got all that covered for you. Coverage of the Class A and B-Boys tourney begins at noon Central, 11 Mountain. Class AA boys and girls from Rapid City begins at 2 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Mountain. Give us a chance to bring all that exciting basketball action to you. We're getting Dr. Brian Maher on the phone here. He's with the Sioux Falls School District. We're going to talk with him about the Computer Science Immersion Program at the Sioux Falls School District. It's a fascinating topic about bringing coding to kindergartners at three schools in Sioux Falls. Lots of questions for him there. And then later on this week, tomorrow, we have someone to talk about genetics. It's been a big story in the news lately about the Affordable Care Act and what Congress is doing to revise it. Lots of people have questions about genetic testing. So we're not going to talk about the politics of that tomorrow, but we are going to talk about what happens, when you get your genetic testing done, what sort of information, where's the science at right now, that's sort of what we're doing here. I'm going to bring Chris Lawfrey, one of our producers, in the conversation now. Chris is in Vermilion today. I'm in Sioux Falls. Chris, thanks for being with me.
That's great. Thank you for allowing me on the show.
All right. We've got some good stuff coming up. And in case people haven't had a chance to sort of see behind the scenes, our producers for the show, Chris Lawfrey, Steve Zwemke, sort of furiously digging up stories and contacting people throughout the state of South Dakota, people who are coming in, some of our friends who come back again and again. Chris, give me an idea of something that you're particularly excited about that you've been able to book for the show that we'll get to have on later on this week or next.
Boy, we're going to talk to Coach Derek Miles tomorrow from the University of South Dakota, along with a freshman that just won a national title in pole vaulting, which if you've ever pole vaulted before, and I can honestly say that I have, it's frightening.
Oh, you've done this?
I have done it. I've done it once or twice when I was in track and field, and I'll tell you what, that there's something to be said for pole vaulting, especially 18 feet.
I don't know that you should have told me that because now I want to know, how do you even start with something like that? What are the beginning steps to learn pole vaulting?
You know, you're taking me back a ways, and all I know is you've got this long, bendable stick, if you want to call it that. There's a term, we'll learn it tomorrow.
Right.
And you just have to time it just right, and then get your body just right, and let it flail you, if you will, into the air, like this freshman Chris did, 18 feet to win a national title. So it's going to be interesting. But we'll catch that tomorrow. In the meantime, Lori, we've got Dr. Maher on the phone, and we're all set.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. Dr. Brian Maher is superintendent of the Sioux Falls School District. We're going to talk about the district's technology immersion program. Dr. Maher, thanks for being with us.
You are welcome. And if you would like me to, I would love to talk about the pole vault. That's one of my favorite events ever.
Really? Have you done this as well?
Well, I did it. I did it. But all three of my kids were multiple time state champions in Nebraska, and my two daughters competed for the University of Nebraska in the pole vault. So I love it. I was fascinated listening to you.
All right. Well, we're just tapping the surface of that. And my daughter wanted to try it for track and field, and she saw it for the first time. And she said, I want to do that. And I said, you can't sign up for track and field then. So you're a courageous parent.
So my son ended up setting the state record in Nebraska in the pole vault. And one of the things you need to know as a parent is you don't start out at that high height. You start out at very low heights, and you work your way up. And until you become more proficient as a vaulter, you don't get to those high heights. So let your daughter give it a try.
Give it a try. Is there a certain body type that's better for this? Are you looking for taller kids, shorter kids? Does it matter?
Fast kids. Always looking for fast kids.
So that's a physics question then. The faster you go down and the better your technique is. I'm super curious about it now.
Well, it really is. That pole is simply a fulcrum. And so the faster you can move that pole from the ground to perpendicular or parallel with the bar, the higher you're going to go.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Sounds simple, doesn't it?
Is that the mindset that you have to get, though, is that it's really kind of quite simple, and if you stick to those fundamentals, you're going to improve?
Here's one of the things I love about the pole vault in terms of the mindset question, and that is I think you're always competing against your best.
Hmm.
And certainly you see how that compares to the other kids that are involved. But really, you're competing against yourself. I'm going to try to do better next week than I did this week. And
right.
I love that about it.
I love the joyful. First of all, it's fascinating to me. You have to see the slow motion replays of whatever attempt or, you know, successful leap. And then the celebration at the end when they kind of just cross that pole and then they know, you know, on their face and in their mind that they've done it, and then they have that whole free fall down to the mat. That's my favorite moment in pole vault, when you see someone who has been successful and they get to enjoy that fall.
Let me describe a picture to you. So here's my son. He's at the state meet in Nebraska. He's attempting the state record, which was 16 feet 2 inches. He makes it, and he's pretty stoic. He's pretty level-headed. Yeah. You don't see a lot of emotion out of him. And he made it, and he landed in the pit, and, you know, he shook some hands, and that was about it. That was all the emotion he showed. But the next day, we got a still of him where he was descending about 3 feet below the bar.
Yeah.
And he had both arms out and his hands clenched in victory. But between that and the time that he hit the mat, all that emotion went away. So you are exactly right. It's that moment of victory that is so awesome, and all of my kids got to experience that. I was not near good enough to experience that.
Oh, what a great story. Thank you for sharing that with us, Dr.
Yeah.
Maher. Let's go ahead and talk about technology immersion. We are. Did you not know that? No one told you. You're right there.
I wouldn't have shared all that personal stuff.
Oh, my apologies to you, sir. I thought you had been told,
okay.
But what a gift to sort of the community to sort of have that side of things, too, talking about our kids and such. So we appreciate that from you.
Okay. I apologize for monopolizing your time.
No, it's been great. I was really kind of excited about that. Interesting. The human stories are the best ones. So let's go ahead and talk about computer immersion coding in kindergarten. This is something recently approved by the Sioux Falls School Board?
Correct. Yeah, the board approved that 2 weeks ago last night as an initiative and a venture we're going to embark upon.
And describe to me how it works, because I think people from Sioux Falls, I don't know about other communities, but people from Sioux Falls are probably fairly familiar with these specialty schools. There's a Spanish immersion. There's the Eugene Field Arts Program. There's what's the other one called? Sort of the parents
all,
or
all city,
right?
All city
where there's there's parent volunteers in the classroom. So how is this one going to work?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And that's one of the things that really attracted me to the Sioux Falls School District is, you know, we have the benefit of size. And one of the things that size allows us to do is really differentiate curriculums. And so we've done that, as you've just pointed out. And so this was our next step in what could we provide to our population that they don't already have in abundance. And we really thought that computer science was the area that we wanted to move into. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason for that is that we really believed that computer science was going to allow our student population to choose whether or not they want to, but really have the skills to fill a job skills gap that is here in the city, that's certainly in our state, and absolutely in our nation and worldwide, and that is with computer scientists. And if you drill that down even a little further, the number of females that go into computer science is limited. So we really thought that providing a curriculum that all of our kids take, meaning all of our boys and all of our girls, that maybe we could do our part in working our way through that that job skills gap.
Hmm. And you received some feedback from people in the community that said it's really never too early to start teaching coding, all the way down to kindergarten. What can you say about that?
I had an experience at Washington High School, and they were having an hour of code that day. An hour of code is kind of an experiential time for females to really be drawn into the computer science lab and to learn about all of the opportunities in computer science. Well, the instructors from around our district brought in some role models, and there were five role models there for our students while I was there watching. Five females, and they worked at Raven Industries, they worked at Citibank, and they worked at Eros. And I had a chance to talk to three of those five female role models, and I asked them a question. The first question I asked was, are we doing enough to prepare students interested in computer science? And certainly they have a bias being in that industry, and they said no, that we weren't doing enough, and I suspected that's what they would say. But I was more interested in the question I was leading up to, and that was, at what point do you think we should begin teaching computer science to our students? Two of them said to me, in elementary school. One of them was even more specific and said, at kindergarten.
Hmm.
And so those are
that surprised you?
It did.
Yeah.
I mean, it shocked me. And this is a guy that years ago taught basic the language basic to students in high schools. And so I just thought that was amazing that they thought we should start that early. But that indeed is what we're going to do.
All right. So the million-dollar question for me as a parent is, when my daughter was in kindergarten, you know, I was keeping her away from the screens for as long as I could. I was keeping her away. She didn't grow up with an iPad or an iPhone. You know, I was all about no screen time, play outside. So that hasn't really changed. But how do you incorporate sort of the technology that the kids these days are going to need to know with the fact that they're 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds,
yeah,
7-year-olds?
I am so glad you asked that question, because computer science immersion is not all about screen time, and it's easy for us to leap to that conclusion, but it's about training logic and utilizing critical thinking skills. And there are any number of ways to do that that do not include looking at a computer screen. Let me give you a couple of examples. I had an opportunity to see a Code to the Future program implemented, and one of the things that I saw were kids working on a circuit board. And the old physics teacher in me was pretty excited about that, but also shocked when I learned the students who I saw drawing completed circuits or incomplete circuits and being able to tell me why they were complete or incomplete were fourth graders. I thought that was somewhat amazing. Beyond that, one of the things that I saw were students, fourth or fifth grade students playing chess. And that in and of itself wasn't eye-opening, but they had their backs to the chessboard and could not look at the chessboard. And they had another person moving the pieces as they told them to. So they had to move, they had to memorize the board in their mind. And think about that. The game of chess changes every game. The moves aren't always the same. It's not like memorizing one pattern and being able to go back and go to that all the time. So the spatial awareness, the logic, and the critical thinking that comes with that sort of activity will be full of what we do in our computer science immersion schools. Certainly screen time is a part of that, but it is our students will not be in front of a screen all day, every day.
Give me an idea of how this, the curriculum is the same, and then it's just interpreted in different ways throughout the rest, throughout every, you know, sort of portion of their day, as I understand it. Can you explain to me how that works?
Yep, you're exactly right. In fact, we have sent our curriculum to the folks at Code to the Future so that when we get deep into the professional development, they can provide activities for our curriculum. So our English curriculum, we just adopted last night at our board meeting a new English language arts adoption, and that will be our curriculum in every one of our elementary schools. We have a math curriculum in every one of our elementary schools. The computer science immersion will be no different, just as it's no different in Spanish immersion. It's just delivered in Spanish. So the activities that are associated with, I'll say, a certain math course will be activities that correspond with a critical thinking skill, a coding skill, or a computer science-specific skill. I don't know enough to give you an exact example of what that would be, but all of those activities will be tied to our curriculum. So our teachers don't have to learn the process of coding as well as a new curriculum, but they will have to learn new activities associated with their current curriculum.
Any idea which three elementary schools this might roll out into and when?
Yes, they will roll out into Hawthorne Elementary, Lowell Elementary, and Annie Sullivan Elementary. And those were specifically picked partially because of geography. One of those is in the west part of our community, one is in the central part of our community, one is in the eastern part of our community. But also they were picked because as we looked through our strategic plan at our kindergarten through fifth grade, our elementary school population of the schools that you already described where we have pathways other than traditional pathways, we have 1,378 students. And when we broke that population of students down by ethnicity and by socioeconomic status, what we found was that we had far more white students in our specialized schools than we did in our total elementary population, and far more students who were not on our free and reduced price lunch list than in the rest of our elementary students or in the rest of our elementary schools. So we really wanted to find a program and buildings that will allow us to make sure that we have equity and access for all of our students, K through 5, and that won't be based on race or socioeconomic status.
So, Dr. Maher, when you list those schools, I've done some reading mentoring in Hawthorne, for example. We just have about a minute left, just so you are aware of that. But you, by bringing that coding program into that school, you've created the next generation.
Did I say Hawthorne?
You said Hawthorne. I wrote down Hawthorne. No.
I meant Hayward.
Hayward, okay.
Hayward.
So when we talk about diversity, you're really creating the next, possibly creating the next generation of computer scientists in South Dakota, and yeah, you targeted some of the schools with a lot of diversity there. So you've created an employee pool as well, in some ways, possibly.
Well, that's what we hope. We hope above anything else that we teach all of our kids to think critically. So that's ultimately what we're after there. We really do believe that we're going to be able to teach some job skills too, and maybe above all else, we're going to provide equitable access to highly effective programs for all of our kids, regardless of race or socioeconomic status.
When do you think it might roll out?
We will start this fall. Those three programs will be up and running this fall.
Pretty exciting stuff. New English language arts curriculum adoption as well. In 30 seconds, can you tell me anything noteworthy about that?
I would say the first thing I would go to is it was a typical curriculum adoption cycle. That cycle runs over multiple years. It's not just an event. I don't know that there's anything new or innovative or creative or just crazy that would capture anybody's attention. But I also don't want to be dismissive of the time and the energy that many, many, many people put in to that development of that curriculum.
All right. Dr. Brian Maher, superintendent of the Sioux Falls School District, we appreciate all your time today, sir. Thanks so much.
It was my pleasure. Thanks a lot.